At 6 years old, I had never been in darkness like that before. It was just pitch black, like the dark was touching me, engulfing me, like I was actually inhaling the darkness. Chowchilla in 1976 was a cow town. You could drive through the heart of town in about 30 seconds. Very close-knit community.
Everybody looked out for each other. People didn't lock their doors.
There was nothing to fear. I didn't know what fear was.
I still have a hard time grasping the way that my life changed on July 15th. Just another average summer day, very hot, going to summer school, and that day we got to go to the town swimming pool. Got back on the bus, ready to go home.
The bus driver was Ed Ray. He was a strong, quiet man. Everybody liked Edward and respected him.
The buses had the windows down, the hot summer breeze, the kids were laughing and singing.
Happy and just glad to be going home. What I remember was we're traveling, he just left off two kids. All of a sudden he said, "What the heck is this?"
And then I can remember the bus stopping at a stop sign. Edward went to go around a white van that was parked in the road.
And then this man came up with a stocking over his head with a gun and said, "Open the door."
The first man came on the bus and he had a gun. Ed Ray said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Shut up and move to the back." I remember telling him that if he didn't get me home on time, my dad would be on him like stink on skunk. You know, I wasn't afraid of anything. I didn't know I needed to be. And then another man came on the bus and he had a sawed-off double barrel shotgun. The shotgun filled me with terror.
The masked men had pantyhose pulled over their face. It was a very distorted look.
Where their eyes were, it almost looked hollow. It was like looking at death.
One of the kidnappers got into the driver's seat and the bus started moving again. I started to think, I wonder where they're taking us.
26 school children and their bus driver have vanished. Anguished parents, President Ford, hundreds of searching police are asking the question, where are the children?
Just outside Chowchilla, on July 15th, 1976, the frightening journey began.
We start driving down the road.
I was wondering how it was going to feel to die. I was too scared to move.
26 terrified children, some as young as five, were staring down the barrel of a sawed-off shotgun. Three masked men had hijacked the Dairyland Elementary School bus. One had the shotgun, one drove the bus, and one followed behind in the white van they'd used to block the road.
It's a hard thing to explain because I'd never been around guns. You only seen bad guys in the movies with stockings on, you know, so I knew it wasn't good.
Edward kept telling us kids just to be quiet, sit down, do what they say. Edward was speaking in a harsh tone, and that normally was not the Edward that we knew and loved. Eventually, the bus went off the road down into a dry riverbed.
And into this big grove of bamboo that were taller, actually, than the bus.
And then, as I looked out one of the side windows, I saw that there was another van that was parked there.
They parked the bus, and there was a green van down there waiting for us.
Even at the age of 9, little Jennifer Brown seemed to know the horror of that day should be documented. She later made this recording with her mom.
And there was 2 guys standing from the bus door to the van door with guns, with pantyhose over their heads so we wouldn't run out. And then, see, they pulled the van right up to the bus door.
The kidnappers herded the stunned children from the bus into those 2 vans.
We had to jump from the bus to the van.
So there wouldn't see any feet prints.
When it was my turn to get on the van, he stopped me. He held a shotgun to my stomach. I said, I was doing what you said. And I had to stand there with this gun in my gut until the one van drove away and they backed the second van up. It felt like forever. I thought he was gonna shoot me. I actually did.
Jennifer, Larry, and the rest of the children followed Jody into the second van along with the bus driver, Ed Ray. Then the kidnappers closed the doors.
It was pitch dark.
The vans had been converted into makeshift jail cells by installing wood paneling and even painting the windows. No one could see in or out. The kidnappers sped off with the children, caged in those mobile prisons.
And I felt like I was an animal going to the slaughterhouse.
Around that time, Jennifer's mom, Joan Brown, came home from work. The house was empty.
The children were not there. No peanut butter on the counter, no chairs out there. Well, they just weren't there.
As 1 hour turned to 2, worried parents began helping the police retrace the school bus's route, crisscrossing dozens of rural roads.
Where were those children? 26 of them and a bus driver. Nowhere.
And then, just before sunset, a police pilot spotted the big bus about 7 miles outside Chowchilla, hidden in the dry riverbed.
You would only see it from the air.
Madera County Sheriff Ed Bates rushed to the scene.
We found tire impressions in the sand
that led straight to the front door of the bus.
Obviously, someone had backed their vehicle up to the doors of the bus.
Sheriff Bates was convinced.
I called the governor. I said, I need some help down here.
The children of Chowchilla had become the victims of a brazen and bizarre mass kidnapping.
I had the parents all assembled there in the fire station. Well, you could just look at their faces, and the anxiety and the fear was there. I told them I called the FBI. All of a sudden, I had 30 FBI agents there.
As Sheriff Bates continued to widen the investigation, the children continued to suffer inside the sweltering, pitch-black vans.
We'd bang on where the driver's panel would be, like, let us out, and they would just say, shut up.
And we drove what seemed like for hours upon hours upon hours.
And I remember that I kept falling asleep and coming back awake. I would dream about being I would dream about being up in the forest where my family would go camping.
We all tried to comfort each other.
And a few of my little friends that are 5 and 6, they came over and started laying on me and crying. And I told them, be brave, because everything's going to be all right.
Then the van started to slow down. The kids could feel it, pulling off the road, lurching from side to side on rough terrain before coming to a stop after nearly 12 unbearable hours.
They opened up the door and they took Ed Ray out first. They shut the doors back.
And we're like, where's Edward now? What are they doing?
And I remember they would just grab the first kid that was inside the door.
They just kept doing that.
And they opened the door and they grabbed somebody
else.
They
open up the door.
They take the next kid out and they close the doors. But when they open the doors, you don't see them. I thought they were basically killing us each one at a time.
I kept scooting to the back of the van. And I thought, maybe if I just hide in the corner, they won't come for me.
But they did.
You wake in the middle of the night alone in your apartment, and that feeling starts to set in that something is wrong. Realizing your home is no longer safe, you plan your escape, but he has other plans. The details are the kind that stay with you. Water running in an empty apartment, a locked door that shouldn't be locked, that uneasy feeling of being watched. That's the setup for Unhinged, the new immersive game experience on Netflix. Your phone becomes your controller, flashlight, and lifeline to your best friend. As the attacker in your building closes in, the phone in your hand will ring. The question is, will you answer? Play now, only on Netflix.
I didn't know if it was in the desert, at the beach, in the side of a mountain. I had no idea where we were. I didn't even know if we were in California.
After almost 12 hours in darkness, 10-year-old Jody Heffington was the last to be taken out of the first van.
Being the last one, you don't know what's going to happen because you don't see nobody else. What happened to them? If you didn't kill them, where are they at? They had flashlights kind of like shining in their faces and then one shining on your face. And they said, what's your name? And I have a little bit of a smart ass in me. And I said, Pudding-Tang, ask me again, I'll tell you the same. I was pissed and I was scared at the same time. They said, if you don't tell us your name, you're never gonna see your mom and dad again. Do you understand? And they took all my belongings. And then they said, you're gonna go down in this hole right here.
The hole led to an old truck trailer buried underground. Ed Ray and the children from the first van were there.
There was a table set up in the back. It was surrounded with jugs of drinking water.
On some of the mattresses, they had some cereal, a loaf of bread, and some peanut butter.
In the wheel wells, they had cut holes in them for toilets. We could hear fans, so we knew that there was some sort of ventilation.
14-year-old Michael Marshall was still in the other van with some of the youngest children.
The kids got a hold of me and were holding on to me and scared out of their, you know, we're all just scared out of our wits.
As they did before, the kidnappers removed the children one by one. Michael and the youngest, 5-year-old Monica Artery, were the last ones left in the van.
It was just me and her.
Not knowing what had happened to the other children, or if they were even alive, Michael says he couldn't bear to hand Monica over to the kidnappers. So when they opened the doors again, he went first.
I had to take her hands from mine and rip and take them apart, say, be okay, and go with them and leave her. That was hard. As soon as I got on that ladder and took a step down, and I heard the rest of the kids say, it's Mike, it's Mikey, Michael. And I realized that everybody was alive.
And to his relief, not long after, Monica came climbing down that ladder. They were all together again.
We're okay. We're okay. We're okay. So right now, so far, we're all right.
But the sense of relief was short-lived.
Before I knew it, the ladder was gone. They threw a rolled toilet paper down and said, we'll be back for you. And that was it.
The kidnappers then covered the opening with a manhole cover.
I remember it just went dark. And you just hear the material getting thrown on us. We were being buried alive.
Buried 12 feet underground.
I just remember looking up at that hole. I wanted to stay close. I wanted to be like right there because that was the way out.
Ed Ray and Mike Marshall, they looked at every corner, every wall for an escape route, got underneath the manhole cover, pushed up on it. They couldn't move it. So Ed Ray determined that it was time for everyone to get some rest.
The minutes and hours ticked by.
It would be silent, and then somebody would bust out crying, and the hole would just erupt, everybody crying. The thing that made me cry was not being able to say goodbye to my mom. And I'm remembering the last time that I saw her and wishing I could have told her goodbye.
Throughout much of this day, parents and other family of the missing children came to the command post set up in downtown Chowchilla to try desperately to fathom some reason out of this madness. Carol Marshall's 14-year-old son, Mike, was another on the bus. Any chance at all this could be some kind of terrible hoax or joke that someone is playing?
I imagine there's a chance. I hope that's all it is.
It is believed to be the largest kidnapping in U.S. history.
So far, there's been no word from any abductors.
They had been in the hole for almost 12 hours, and the conditions were deteriorating.
We had eaten the food. The fans on the ventilator stopped. My little brain started to grasp the concept of we may really not go home.
There was this one boy, and he kept kicking blocks out from underneath the 4x4 pillars. And so the roof of the van was starting to cave in, the seams were breaking, dust was flowing through. The sides of the van were bowing in, children just screaming and crying.
We thought, if we're gonna die, we're gonna die trying to get out of here.
See more photos from the case at 48hours.com.
There are people you are told to trust, lawyers, teachers, especially doctors. But what happens when you put your life in someone's hands and they betray you? The hit podcast, Dr. Death, is back, and this season is unlike any other. Dr. Death, the Cowboy, is the story of a charming neurosurgeon who rode into Western towns selling a persona of confidence and care. He wore cowboy boots in the operating room and became sought after by patients he promised to heal. Instead, he left a trail of broken bodies. This season is about a doctor who was never truly held accountable for the patients whose lives he ruined. A story of greed, betrayal, and a fight for justice that will leave you questioning who to trust. Listen to Dr. Death, the Cowboy, wherever you get your podcasts, or binge the entire series right now only with Audible.
If you've been holding back on launching your dream business, it's time to stop making excuses. Shopify is where you finally go to get started. They offer everything you need to succeed from day one. They completely simplify the process so you can focus on what matters. Think about how you want your brand to look. Imagine the confidence of launching with a world-class checkout system already built into it, allowing your customers to buy effortlessly in just one click. Whenever you run into a roadblock or find yourself asking those tough startup questions, Shopify's AI assistant called Sidekick is right there to help you build and troubleshoot. You get to build your dream on the same reliable platform that powers household names like Mattel, saving you time to scale. All you need is the idea. Shopify handles the rest. Go to shopify.com/tenderfoot to start your free trial today. That's shopify.com/tenderfoot. shopify.com/tenderfoot.
As a young kid, you don't have a lot of sense of time. There was no sunlight, so you couldn't tell if it was day or night. We were out of food, we were out of water. The roof was caving in. It just was a desperate situation.
Everybody got the mattresses and stacked them up as high as we could go.
Right underneath the manhole cover.
People started standing on each other's shoulders. I was a very tall girl and very strong, so they stood on my shoulders when they didn't stand on Edward's.
They took turns pushing up on the manhole cover.
I'm giving it everything I got, and all the kids are cheering me on, you know. Come on, Mike, you can do it, you can do it. Then all of a sudden they said, it moved, it moved.
But they were far from being free. The kidnappers had put truck batteries and dirt on top of the manhole cover and had constructed a wooden box around it. Once the manhole cover was moved, that box was just big enough for Michael to stand in.
Edward squeezes near to his half-foot hole.
Like Jennifer, Michael Marshall made a recording about his experience.
I hit on top of it. I hit on top of his box. I started hitting and pounding and hitting and pounding.
He dug until he was exhausted, and then he kept on digging. There was no quit in him.
None of us knew when we got out, they're just going to be standing there with shotguns in our head and stuff. So we were pretty scared.
Then suddenly, this ray of sunlight. This ray of sunlight came down into the opening. It was catching the dust. And the dust particles looked like a bunch of shooting stars. There was this airflow that came out of the van. And I knew we were free. I need a minute.
The air and the light that was beaming coming through.
Mike Marshall actually, brave person that he is, crawled out of the hole first.
And I stuck my head out, and there was nobody, I didn't see anybody. And I could see we were in the hills.
He said, the coast is clear. And so we started taking the little ones and putting them up there, and Mike grabbed them. And that part was kind of scary too, because we're out now. We don't know who's out here.
It was approximately 8 p.m. on July 16th. They had been in the hole for nearly 16 hours.
We all just scurried like a bunch of little mice. We saw conveyor belts, excavators. It looked like the Flintstones. And all these men with hard hats came to us and looked at us like, who are you?
The kidnappers had buried them in a rock quarry in Livermore, California, 100 miles away from Chowchilla.
When police arrived, as evidence, they took photos of every child.
An Alameda County jail bus came and it was like, yeah, they put us back on a bus.
Then they transported them to the closest place that could hold them, the Santa Rita Rehabilitation Center, a local jail.
I remember going in the bus and you could see the prison wire and you thought, well, they're taking us into jail. They took us into what looked like classrooms. They brought us apples and soda.
They had these coveralls, and all us little kids got into them, and we had to roll the pants up about 10 feet. And then we rolled the arms up, and we were all sitting there. Some of them didn't roll our arms up, and we sitting there flapping our arms. We said, hey, we can fly.
Over the next few hours, Ed Ray and the children were examined by doctors. They were also questioned by police.
Each one of us was interrogated by ourselves to tell our story.
How do you describe somebody that has pantyhose over their face?
After 4 hours of questioning, they were finally allowed to go home.
They put us on a Greyhound, escorted us back to Chowchilla.
It was time for Mom and Dad. I just wanted my mom and dad.
It was 4 a.m. when the bus arrived at last.
It had been almost 36 hours since their traumatic ordeal began.
The scene was like a mob scene. News cameras and TV lights.
Everybody started saying, are you all right, Jennifer, and all this stuff. And I said, yeah, I'm fine. Then whenever we got into this room, I found my mom and my dad.
We pulled up to Chowchilla and I was asleep. So when I got off the bus, everybody started taking pictures of me and said, I'm like, how are you doing? What was it like?
They just let us off the bus with all these people. And you didn't know where your parents were?
This man carried me off the bus and he put me in my mom's arms. And I said, hi, Mom, and fell asleep on her shoulder. I felt like I was finally safe.
Nothing was ever the same. Nothing was ever the same after that.
We had no idea what our kids had been through. None whatsoever.
How does it feel to be a big movie star?
I don't know. I've never been a movie star before.
For 9-year-old Jennifer Brown, the experience has allowed her to still see the world with compassion.
Why do you suppose that they would do something like that?
I don't know. They didn't have enough love.
She had horrible nightmares. She would run screaming into our bedroom. And she wasn't even awake. And she would tell us later that she dreamt that they were lined up and shot.
One night, I was dreaming that I was falling down this hole and I was trying to get out. I started screaming for my mom. Mom came in and all I could do was cry. And all she could do was hold me.
Let's be honest, traditional banks have a habit of hitting you with overdraft and monthly fees, and those costs can really add up when you're just trying to manage your own money. But Chime is changing the way people bank. They offer the most rewarding, fee-free banking built for you, not the 1%. Chime has thousands of fee-free ATMs because you shouldn't pay to access your own money. And Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, completely fee-free. You'll get 5% cash back on your Chime card in a category of choice like gas or groceries, and savings that grow faster than a 3.75 APY. My younger self could have seriously benefited from all that. Plus, Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. I'm talking real humans 24/7. Chime is not just smarter banking. It is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. Head to chime.com/48hours. That is chime.com/48hours. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Today, in this rock quarry, they unearthed a truck that was prison and very nearly a tomb for 26 children and their school bus driver. Unearthing the who and why of all this is much harder.
In the days following the kids' escape, investigators searched the rock quarry and the van that had been their underground tomb, hoping they would find clues that would lead them to the kidnappers.
They looked to see who would have keys to the quarry. In order to have access to bury this moving container undetected, you would have to have access.
Assistant District Attorney Jill Klinge.
Fred Woods had keys to that quarry.
24-year-old Frederick Newhall Woods, the son of the owner of the quarry, immediately became a person of interest.
They looked at the ledger, surveillance tapes, and started to put it all together at that point.
Security guards told investigators they had seen three young men digging a large hole in the quarry months before the kidnapping. One of them, they said, was Fred Woods. And Woods had a record. 2 years earlier, he had been charged with grand theft auto. Arrested with him were two of his friends, James Schoenfeld, Fred's partner in a used car business, and James's younger brother, Richard. All three were from wealthy families who lived in San Francisco's nicest suburbs. They escaped with a fine and probation.
They're young, they're wealthy. I think it added a component of fascination to the story because it was so unlikely that three men such as these would commit such an atrocious crime.
Investigators executed a warrant to search Fred Woods' father's estate.
For the last 2 days, the Woods estate has looked like an armed camp. Dozens of officers looking for anything.
What they found there was a treasure trove of evidence.
We were able to recover one of the guns that was used during this kidnapping. This crime was planned out for a year and a half in intricate detail. You actually have a document labeled plan, and it sets out the way they were going to commit the kidnapping. And then they, on the right-hand side, put how they would compensate or deal with what could go wrong.
They also recovered the draft of a ransom note.
The draft of the ransom note says $2.5 million, but in actuality, they were going to ask for $5 million from the state of California.
But the kidnappers were never able to deliver their demand.
When they tried to call the Chowchilla Police Department, because of the number of calls that were coming in worldwide, the phone lines were jammed. They couldn't get through, so they took a nap. And by the time they woke up, they saw on the news that the kids had been found. So they were never able to request their ransom.
And so the search is on nationwide for these three men and their...
Arrest warrants were issued. Richard Schoenfeld turned himself in. Fred Woods and James Schoenfeld fled California, but not for long.
James Schoenfeld was captured at dawn today. Police say he ran hard all over the western United States, but he did not run well. Frederick Woods was arrested by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police this afternoon, just across the Washington state border in Vancouver.
I remember being physically ill when I actually saw him. After that, you kind of did have a sense of, you can breathe. They're behind bars.
So what drove these young men, seemingly well off, to kidnap young children for money? James Schoenfeld eventually said despite their parents' wealth, he and Fred Woods were in serious debt.
He would later tell the parole board, "We needed multiple victims to get multiple millions, and we picked children because children are precious. The state would be willing to pay ransom for them, and they don't fight back."
I think that the two Schoenfelds did it just on pure persuasion by Fred Woods. Fred Woods, in my own personal opinion, and I have a master's degree, I think he was a sociopath. Some might call him a psychopath.
With the overwhelming evidence against them, Woods and the Schoenfels pleaded guilty, to 27 counts of kidnapping for ransom and robbery. But they refused to plead guilty to 8 counts of bodily harm. Those charges would send them to prison for life without the possibility of parole.
So 16 months after their abduction, Jennifer, Michael, Jody, and some of the other children face the kidnappers in court.
You're in this little box, and they're there looking at you, just glaring at you and staring you down.
They testified that in addition to the emotional trauma, they had suffered physical wounds, like cuts and bruises.
And I looked over at them, and I just broke down. That was the first time I cried. So they allowed my father to come sit by me, and that made me feel a lot safer.
The kidnappers were sitting to my left at a table. I remember giving my dad my gum because I told him I was going to spit my gum at him.
You say they would give you this funny look. What did that make you feel?
Scared.
I did my testimony, I answered my questions, and I left that courtroom with my head held high, and there was no way that I was going to let them see me cry.
A California judge today imposed mandatory life prison sentences without parole on those 3 young men who kidnapped 26 Chowchilla
schoolers. I remember thinking, they're going to go to jail. They're not going to do this to anybody else. That's all that I need to know.
With the kidnappers sentenced to prison for the rest of their lives, the survivors thought their nightmare was finally over.
Bye.
But it was just beginning.
Bye, Jennifer.
See more photos from the case at 48hours.com.
This time of year, I want more energy, not more steps in my wellness routines. Grunes can make keeping on top of wellness habits easy because it's literally just one daily pack of gummies, no bottles to track and no powders to mix. Grunes are a convenient, comprehensive formula in one delicious daily pack of gummy bears. This isn't a standard multivitamin, a simple greens gummy, or a basic prebiotic. It's all of those things combined and then some at a fraction of the price of individual supplements. And bonus, it tastes great. Grunes provides a full daily pack of gummies because you simply can't fit the immense amount of whole food nutrients Grunes does into just one single gummy. Plus, it makes taking daily nutrition a fun, rewarding treat rather than a chore. And each pack includes 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is 3 times the amount of dietary fiber compared to the leading greens powders. Grunes ingredients are also backed by over 35,000 research publications. Save up to 52% off with code HOURS at grunes.co. That's code HOURS at GRUNS.co.
Just 5 weeks after being buried alive, the gutsy children of Chowchilla and their bus driver, Ed Ray, were hailed as heroes. There was even a trip to Disneyland.
Everyone thought that was great because the good memories of Disneyland would overshadow the bad memories of the kidnapping.
But it wasn't that simple.
In a way, you try to be normal. But when you've gone through something that's so traumatic, it's hard to go back and be a normal kid again.
Sometimes it's like life is an act. You try to be good for everybody else so they don't worry, but they worry anyway, so I advise everybody else not to do it that way.
The survivors struggled to move forward. But just 4 years after the kidnappings, a critical turning point.
The kidnappers' lawyers appealed the finding of bodily harm.
Prosecutor Jill Klinge.
And the appellate court overturned it. And while acknowledging the horrific nature of the crime, stated that the injuries suffered did not rise to the level of bodily harm under the law.
So Fred Woods and the Schoenfeld brothers were resentenced to life with the possibility of parole.
They would get a parole hearing every 1 or 2 years.
I felt like I had been betrayed by the justice system.
Just 6 years after the kidnappings, the parade of parole hearings began.
every time one of the kidnappers came up for parole, it triggered all their fears and trauma.
The hearings took place inside the prison.
They sit in the same room, and it's not a large room, with the kidnapper.
The first time, I was terrified.
For all three kidnappers, there have been more than 60 parole hearings to date. Jody Heffington went to nearly all of them.
It just seems like every 3 years I go, and I go three times every time. It's excruciating, and the aftermath is never good.
Jody and the other survivors watched helplessly as Richard Schoenfeld was the first to be granted parole in June 2012, 36 years after the kidnappings. 3 years later, James Schoenfeld was paroled too.
As far as I know, they have not been in any kind of trouble.
The same could not be said for Fred Woods. He repeatedly broke prison rules. He was caught with pornography and cell phones.
Hello, my name is Jody Medrano. I was Jody Heffington.
In 2018, 48 Hours was at Fred Woods' 15th parole hearing and recorded audio of Jody's testimony.
To listen to him talk about his poor childhood, I don't know if I want to laugh, cry, cuss him, or what, because where did my childhood go?
Like I told him, Mr. Woods, you're not a kidnapper, you're a thief. You're a thief of lives. Not just the kids that were in the bus. But they stole our families' lives. And what we all had before that.
After that hearing, Woods was again denied parole. It was 28 hours of terror that will always be with Michael, Jennifer, Jody, and Larry, all who have managed to find ways to get on with living.
Healing continues, if you allow it.
Larry Park, who spent his 20s and 30s abusing drugs, now owns a handyman business and volunteers as a pastor at a local church. His nightmares have finally stopped, and he is sober.
I have 9 years sober.
His sobriety was motivated by an epiphany about the kidnappers.
My resentment for them was killing me. One night, I was laying in bed and I said, God, help me to forgive them.
Larry met the men, shook their hands, and did forgive them. Here he is with Richard Schoenfeld.
It changed my life. Something washed over me. And there was peace like I had never known. And I knew that day that I would be okay.
Jennifer Brown Hyde, a wife, mother, and executive assistant, says it took her decades before she could even sleep without a nightlight.
And I've had family and church family and coworkers that have piece by piece helped put me back together. And I want people to know that that little girl that was kidnapped and buried alive has managed to live a wonderful life.
Michael Marshall had lost his way after the kidnapping.
I went to bed at 18, drunk and hungover and blacked out. And woke up about 48, with a hangover. Blurry.
He is sober and has found happiness as a father and a long-distance trucker. He tries not to think about those kidnappers.
What they put my mom and dad through is something I cannot forgive.
Jody Heffington never left the Chowchilla area. She opened her own hair salon and raised a son. But she struggled to find peace of mind.
How that day affected me has affected me every day in some way or another. I think it made me not a good daughter, not a good sister, not a good aunt, and especially not a good mother. And probably not a good friend. I try to be those things, but it seems like it just took something from me that I can't ever get back. And I can't tear it down. No matter how hard I try and no matter what I do.
A young mother found dead in her car.
Where's the gun, sir?
It's right here in her hand.
It appears she took her own life, but could she have shot herself twice?
It just seems like something out of a movie instead of real life.
48 Hours, Saturday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.